It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
What's up, guys? Before we start the podcast today, I want to tell you about my friends at the Outdoor Adventure Expo. The Outdoor Adventure Expo will be held Friday, April 3rd and Saturday, April 4th at the Benton County Fairgrounds. Entry to the expo is free with a $10 paid parking tag. Jace Robertson from Duck Dynasty will be there, and there will be a bull riding event and classic car show as well. It will be great fun for the family, so make sure to call 479-225-3928 for more information about this great event. Welcome into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined alongside, well, I guess we should probably start calling you the Prophet, Scotty Bordelon, because last week during the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, I asked Scotty, what would be the biggest story from the SEC tournament? And Scotty said the coronavirus. Little did you know that you were going to be very, very correct.
Bingo, sadly.
Yeah. Two games played at the SEC tournament, and we promised y'all that we would come back in the last podcast, and so we are men of our words. So we are back. Just not a whole lot to talk about on the floor with results as far as games go. But there is a lot to talk about and to wrap up the season and, I don't know, try and give you, the fans, some closure on a season that really the players don't get any closure for.
No, not at all. I tweeted the other day, you know, after the NCAA announced that, you know, the spring sport championships were canceled and, you know, the NCAA tournament not going to happen, men or women. College World Series isn't going to happen. Baseball or softball, like, that really sucks.
Yeah.
It really sucks from our perspective too, because, man, I've gone to Omaha the last 2 years, and that's been, you know, that's been a highlight of my year, each of the last 2 years. I got to take my wife last year, and we got to spend, you know, like 4 or 5 days in Omaha just kind of checking everything out. We rode scooters around the city, checked out some really cool spots, and now, like, we don't know if Arkansas was going to go again, obviously. Like, they had a, feel like it had a pretty good shot, but, like, it's just, it's off the table now, and it's just, it sucks. And I tweeted the other day that, you know, your heart just kind of hurts for guys like Adriel Bailey and Jimmy Witt, because that, it's such an abrupt end to their careers, and they both had really interesting careers, like, in their own special way. Like, Jimmy, I don't know if you knew this, but Jimmy came to Arkansas as a freshman and then transferred away and came back, and
it's a part of the drinking game that we never got to.
Right. Yeah. Maybe we should do that, a special COVID-19 drinking game.
You can't find a sporting event that's on, so good luck with that.
Yeah,
the marble races.
Right. You just pull up an old NCAA tournament game that you don't remember the final score to, just like a random NCAA tournament generator, find an old game. But your heart just kind of hurts for those guys because it just ended so abruptly. And you also feel for the baseball players who don't even get a chance to play this spring. Like, they worked for so long to get to this point, and now it's all been wiped away. And then people like Alexis Tolfrey and Kiara Williams, it's just been cut short, man. You just really hate it for them, because, I mean, I feel like they still had some left in the tank for the tournament.
And I didn't cover the women's basketball team every single game, but I talked to Mike Nabors, went to a lot of his press conferences. He did a really cool thing with the media and the faculty at the University of Arkansas, to where The women's NCAA tournament, if you don't know, is kind of strange. They play their conference tournament the week before the guys do, because if they waited until the week of the guys, they wouldn't get any TV exposure.
Right.
There wouldn't be anybody covering them. And so they play it a week before so they can get the coverage, get the TV. Well, then after the SEC tournament, for those teams that know they're going to the NCAA tournament, there's a week and a day. The conference tournament ends on Sunday, and selection Monday is not the following Monday, but a week and a day. So they have a week and a day to just waste, basically, you know, to fill it with something. And you can't scout teams because you don't know who you're going to play. And so Mike Nabors did a really cool thing. He invited media, he invited faculty to come out and watch a practice, and not even really watch it, participate in a practice. And by that, I mean, I went out there on a Wednesday. This was, you know, right before everything really broke with the coronavirus stuff.
Yeah, I guess that would have been the 11th.
Yes.
The day Arkansas played Vanderbilt.
Yes, that would have been the 11th. Correct. Yeah. Yep. And I went out there and he got us all in, and he gets the girls out there and he goes, listen, we're going to get the farther on in the week that we go, we're going to get more and more, you know, preparation, like it's starting to get into game week and stuff. But he's like, there's really no point. You know all the plays. We practiced all year for this. He said, so we're just going to have some fun. He broke up. There were three coaches for each team, and I was a coach. And we went to the back room into the locker room, and we picked the teams like an all-star game.
Very cool.
Yeah, and so you're dividing the teams. And so one team gets the first pick, the next team gets the second and third, and then it goes back to back after that. So you pick your teams, you go back out there, you split them up, and then they warmed up like a real game. You got to coach them like a real game. They played. He went out and said, all right, girls, like, I want this to kind of feel like an all-star game. We play defense, but we're not diving on the ground for any balls or anything.
Right. We're just going to have a true all-star game feel.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have some fun here. But to coach them, it was really fun to get an inside view of him and his entire program. His goal for this program was NCAA tournament. And in all honesty, he had a blueprint from people that he had coached under, Schaefer, that is at Mississippi State, I believe, and Blair, that's at A&M. And, you know, he had a blueprint from those guys of, you know, by next year, he wanted his team into the NCAA tournament. But it really happened a year earlier. And he was really impressed with the way this team had bonded together and the steps that they had taken. And their end goal was the NCAA tournament. That was what he was pushing for all year long. And so to think from summer all the way until you are 4 days away from getting to hear your name called for what you worked all season for and not happen. And that's tough. Like you said, you got to feel for those girls.
Yeah, it's awful. And, you know, I watched quite a few of Arkansas's women's games on TV. And the first thing that jumps out to me was just the jump that Alexis Tolfrey made was just unbelievable. I mean, she jumped from kind of a role player last year to first team all SEC guard. Yeah. Like there are not many guards in the SEC that you would take over her, would have taken over her this season. I mean, she was lights out from 3-point range, and she, like, I remember we were sitting in a press conference. We were waiting on Eric Musselman to come in, I think, before Arkansas went to Texas A&M. Or I may have my days confused, but we were sitting in a press conference waiting on Mus to come in, and Arkansas was playing Auburn in the SEC tournament, the SEC women's tournament. And Alexis Tolfrey's got 17 points before you blink.
Right.
Like, she is the definition of a bucket getter. And
She really is.
And Amber Ramirez, you know, I love watching that girl shoot. She's a sniper.
The Splash Sisters, man.
Yeah, absolutely. They were so much fun to watch. And then Kiara Williams just got the ice in her veins with the knocking down a couple of free throws to beat Texas A&M. That was such a fun moment, just watching that play out. And that's an awesome moment for a senior to have. And that'll stay with her for a long time.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. So to give you kind of an idea of where we're going in this podcast, Scotty is writing his year in reviews for all of the players on the basketball team, what they did well, what they need to work on, just things like that, giving a final recap, which is just kind of crazy that you're doing this right now in the middle of March when it feels like the season shouldn't be over. But anyway, He's going through all of that. And so we're going to break down. He's got two players on the docket. He's got Desi Sills and he's got Isaiah Joe. And so we're going to get to those, break down those guys' games. So that's what you can look forward to here in this basketball podcast of Mid-America. Also, before we move on from the Alexis Tolfrey conversation here, there's a great article written by a very hardworking journalist that's going to be on the Whole Hog website here coming up soon.
I can't wait to read that one.
Make sure to check that out. It'll be with Alexis Tolfrey. I wrote it about Alexis Tolfrey and her journey to get here and be on the first team. She's kind of got, I don't want to compare them because their paths are different, but at the same time, they almost followed the same route, the Mason Jones kind of way of not highly recruited out of high school, went to junior college, but she had a lot of looks coming out of junior college, so she could have gone anywhere, and she chose to stay at the U of A.
Yeah, I remember back when I was covering high schools, I can't remember who it was that I was in Hot Springs covering. It may have been P. Ridge, because P. Ridge's boys made the state finals, Class 4A state finals, I think, maybe four years ago. And I stuck around, obviously. I went back to Media Row in the arena and was writing my story. And by the time I finished, the Conway girls were playing in the state finals. I forget against who. I should really remember that, but I don't. And my last memory, this is going to sound insane, my last memory of Alexis Tolfrey before she got to Arkansas was in that state finals game. Seth, she shot 3 of 31 from the floor, and she was 1 of 23 from 3, I believe.
What?
That was my last impression of her. So think about that compared to where she is now.
Jeez.
In the senior year that she had. Just that's pretty unbelievable. And then another fun moment from the SEC tournament, I believe it was her mom who was sitting behind the bench, mm-hmm. and she just wearing a t-shirt. It's like a gray or a black t-shirt, and all it's got on it is a picture of Alexis flexing.
I asked her about
that. Was so tight.
She's like, I just don't know, man. And she's like, but I have people come up to me asking my mom or me if they can get one of those shirts. And she's like, I don't even know where my mom got it. So it was funny.
I may have to reach back out to her. I need one of those.
Right? Okay. And before we get into Desi Sills and Isaiah Joe, Scotty, by the time this podcast is going to come out, and for you people listening, it's going to be too late, but the SEC Network is doing a takeover of, you know, they normally do this in the summer when there's nothing, but I guess right now when there's nothing, they're going through each team, going through takeovers, and Arkansas is coming up, or is going on. And so by the time this podcast is over, it's already going to have passed. But I have a question for you before we get into Isaiah Joe and Desi Sills. If you had one game that you would want to watch over again from the 2019-2020 season, an Arkansas Razorback game, which game are you choosing?
That's a good question. There's several. The first one I think that comes to mind for me is the Tulsa game when Mason went for 41. I think that's kind of when he began his emergence, because we forget that the game before, a week before that, before the Tulsa game, Arkansas went to Western Kentucky and lost. And I think Mason scored 8 or 9 points and was like 1 of 9 from the floor. Like, the only shot he hit in that game was a really tough turnaround 2-point mid-range jumper. And that was it. And then the next time out, he goes for 41, and he wins SEC Player of the Week. And, you know, if you remember, I talked to Mason's prep school coach and his junior college coach last week for a story. And his prep school coach started getting text messages from former coaches who had come to that prep school and checked Mason out. And those coaches were telling Mason's prep school coach, Adam Donyez, they were like, I think I was wrong on this kid. I think that's kind of where it all started. But that's a good one, I think. And then, you know, the game at Ole Miss, Arkansas won 76-72. And Isaiah Joe went for 34 points in that game. And that was, you know, we're going to get into it later, but Isaiah really struggled from shooting the three in the corner this year, but he went 4 for 4 that game. I think he was like 6 of 42 from three in the corners.
Jeez.
Before that game. Then he goes 4 for 4. That was a fun one. Maybe the TCU game too, because that was one of Arkansas's best offensive showings of the entire season. Desi Sills went nuts in that game, and that was without Isaiah Joe too. So there's several that you could choose from, but
did you say, I mean, the Georgia Tech game, which was
Georgia Tech game? Yeah, it was a pretty good one.
The Mason Jones.
Yeah, not a bad ending there.
The overtime is the part that just gets you, because it's kind of boring. Nobody scored in overtime.
Right.
Which during the process
kind
of the game,
at the same time, makes it exciting.
Yeah,
but
it's super stressful.
Like, when somebody please score.
Especially when you don't know the outcome, when it's actually happening live. You're like, oh my gosh. It was the only time the Razorbacks played on a Monday the entire year, and they played Georgia Tech and won. Then did they play they played Indiana on a Sunday, right?
Yep. I was in Nashville for that one and missed it.
Oh my goodness.
I was keeping up with it on my phone from Kid Rock's bar. We were watching some live music and having a good time keeping up with it. I was getting like the push notifications sent to my phone. Mm-hmm. I think another underrated game, and this game wasn't on TV, but it was the Valpo game in North Little Rock.
See, and I think
the
that's
atmosphere
why. Yes.
In that building was insane. And Valpo had a couple guys who were kind of mouthy, and Jamario Bell was sitting on the bench. He was all about it. And Mason Jones, I think, was in a little bit of foul trouble, and Jamario and Mason and maybe one other guy on the bench, they were just, man, the first half was just constant yapping.
Dude, Mason
and I had a baseline seat for that game. It was, dude, it was as intense as any game this season, hands down. I wish that game had been televised.
The Adriel Bailey block towards the end.
Incredible. Best block I've ever seen in my life live.
And he's really good at that.
Yeah.
Really good.
Incredible.
Yeah. So there were some fantastic games. And the crazy thing about it is Arkansas, you know, you've heard this if you followed Arkansas basketball, but they really didn't get blown out this year. You had the very bad loss at Tennessee for sure. And then you lost to Florida, which wasn't just an extremely close game. But they were always in games. And so even in the losses, you felt like, you know, 10 minutes left in the game, you go, okay, well, there's still a chance. There's still a chance that Arkansas can win this, and you're going to watch. And they made for an entertaining basketball team this year. Whether or not they would have made the NCAA tournament, who knows? They would definitely have to win at least one more game in the SEC tournament. But they made for some entertaining basketball, and I was looking forward to watching them regardless of where they played postseason, in the NCAA or in the NIT. I thought that an NIT run wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing for this team. All right. We've teased it long enough, Scotty. Let's get into it. Let's start with the Lucky Lefty, or Mr. Lucky Lefty. Is that what it is on Twitter?
Yeah, he's Lucky Lefty. Desi Sills, real Desi Sills, no cap.
Yeah.
On Instagram.
Desi Sills, let's start with what you liked from his game this year.
Yeah, the first thing, I kind of broke it down into strengths and weaknesses. I've done that for the last 2 years. The top thing that I wrote about was that Desi closed the season strong again, and we saw him rise slowly but surely at the end of his freshman season, and he did it in a starting role after Mike Anderson brought him off the bench, plugged him into the starting lineup, and he was an instant spark. And last March, he scored almost 10 points a game, shot 14 of 21 from three. And I remember writing last year that no player on the Arkansas roster rose his stock with Arkansas fans more than Desi Sills to end last season. And I expected, and probably a lot of people expected, Desi to carry that momentum into this season, into his sophomore season. The season starts and he misses his first 17 threes by the end of November. He's shooting under 7% from three. He's like 2 for 30. But as you can read at the bottom of this story, I put in a best quote from Desi. And I think you've got that audio.
Yeah, we got it. Hang on.
It's
here we go.
Quite the clip.
For sure. One thing for sure, shoot a shoot, and always I'm gonna keep on shooting. Eventually they gonna fall, but like Jimmy always tell me, keep my head up high, don't ever hold it down, just keep shooting, try to get a rhythm, get to the rim, and try to, you know, that's what I did tonight.
shoot or shoot. He shot.
He kept shooting.
And it worked out real well for him.
And they eventually started falling. And, you know, through two seasons at Arkansas now, Desi has a reputation as a guy who really turns it on and, you know, plays his best ball late in the year. I looked at his sports reference page on the college basketball page, and, you know, in February and March, in his two seasons at Arkansas, he's played 26 games. He's 46 of 91 from three, which is 51% if you round up. That's really good. And in March, I think he's played nine games in March. He's shooting 60% from three. Dude has been lights out late in the year. He scored 20-plus points three times as a sophomore, and two of those games happened in Arkansas's last four times out. He scored 21 at Georgia, 20 against Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament in the last game of the year. And he was lights out. And he was – I think we saw, you know, after – one of the things is, like, his freshman year, he started that push by – after he joined the starting lineup. This push this year came after he got kind of designated to a six-man role, and he loved it. And Eric Musselman kind of brought it up, kind of approached Desi about maybe potentially getting back in the starting lineup for the SEC tournament. He was like, nah, I'm good. And then he scores 20 points off the bench, hit five threes, which I think were a career high in a single game. And Desi was lights out again right toward the end of the year. And you just hate that the rest of the season didn't play out, because he, kind of like Alexis Tolfer did, I feel like he had a lot left in the bag.
Yeah, I thought that he was almost a wild card off the bench for the Hogs. And with the emergence of Ethan Henderson kind of down the stretch, with Ethan playing some minutes anyway, it gave really the ability for Desi to come off the bench. And I know that they don't play the same position. And if Desi was on the bench, that Musselman could have gone with Harris in the starting lineup. But he also liked Harris coming off of the bench. And so when you had Witt, Jones and Joe out there as your guards, and you could go with a Bailey and Henderson, that gave you that luxury of having Sills. And it was kind of a storm that all things started to click all at the same time for this basketball team, and it really, really started to click for Desi Sills.
For sure. And down the stretch, about the same time that, you know, Isaiah comes back, obviously that's a huge lift to your offensive, like your explosiveness offensively. But at the same time, Desi was a big beneficiary of Isaiah coming back. And, you know, in the last maybe eight or nine games, especially the last six games after Isaiah came back, Arkansas posted, I think, three or four of its top six offensive efficiency numbers. So this offense was clicking at the right time. The only worry was, you know, this team wasn't playing, you know, terrific defense. They weren't really connected all that much, and opponents were, you know, starting to find a little bit of success from 3-point range. But Desi was, I know I've said it a lot already, but he was lights out to the end of the year, and really looking forward to seeing his progression this offseason. You know, just I'll get to some of what I thought were his weaknesses a little bit later, but, you know, if he can shore up just a few things, he's going to be a dynamite player.
He also had a good ability to drive to the hole. He was fearless, is what you said in your article. And that's a great word to describe him. Desi, when he drives to the hole, is always the shortest man in amongst the trees. And he would find a way to get the ball up and give it an opportunity to go in to draw fouls. And early in the season, that's what he had to do because his outside shot wasn't falling.
Absolutely. And, you know, after November, anytime a player goes 2 for 30 from 3-point range in a month, you're probably like, Your role is going to change a little bit. Like, you're probably going to end up coming off the bench, and coaches are probably maybe going to advise you to, you know, just be a little bit more selective with your shots. But Eric Musselman couldn't keep the man off the floor because he led the team in scores at the rim. I think he had 23 in November on 32 attempts, which was tops on the team. And then through January, he led the team in scores at the rim with 46. Like, think about that. Through 3 months, the smallest guy that Arkansas puts on the floor is leading them in scores at the rim. And that goes, like you said, to his fearlessness. And think about the guys that Arkansas faced, like opposing shot blockers that Arkansas faced in those first 3 months of the season. You've got James Banks at Georgia Tech, who I think Georgia Tech had played three games before they met Arkansas. And James Banks had 17 blocks in those three games. I think he may have had one against Arkansas, but they didn't come against Desi Sills. Desi went right at James Banks, right into his chest, finished with the left hand several times. And against, I think it was Northern Kentucky, the game that Mason Jones missed, Desi scored seven times at the rim, which, I mean, that was a really, really special game from Desi. He scored seven times at the rim, and he was 0 of 5 from 3, so he was like, all right, I guess I just got to put my head down and go. And then Charles Bassey at Western Kentucky didn't really have an answer for Desi, because Desi did the same thing to Bassey that he did to James Banks, went right into his chest and drew some contact and finished at the rim. Desi had, I think, 20 points in that game, which I think at the time was, I think it was a career high at the time. So consistently fearless and tough. And, you know, you play the way that Desi does, you're going to get some bumps and bruises, some inadvertent elbows and whatnot. He popped right back up almost every single time. And I remember there was a point, and I think it was early in conference play, it may have been the SEC opener, where he attacked the rim at like a million miles an hour, got tripped, and the first thing that happened after that was his face met, may have been Josh Nebo's knee.
Appropriate name.
Yeah. I mean, that's really rough. But Desi popped up because he knew if he stayed down very long, he was coming out and he didn't want to sit.
He by far, like you said, most fearless basketball player on the University of Arkansas basketball team. What did you see from Sills this year that maybe needs some improvement coming up into his junior campaign?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about his finishing at the rim. You know, he was really, really good, I thought, finishing in the lane and in the restricted area up through January. In February, he had a little bit of a rough stretch. In the lane, he was 14 of 38, which is well under 50%, which is not great. And at the rim, he was 12 of 30. So you saw a little bit of digression there. But at the same time, I mean, you're playing teams like Auburn, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Florida. I think there were three games that kind of stood out where he really struggled with efficiency in the lane. That was Auburn, who went 0 for 4. At Tennessee, he was 0 of 6 in the lane. And then against Florida, he was 0 for 3. That Florida game, I think, was the first time in, gosh, I want to say it was close to, it may have been 40 games played that he didn't score at all. And he was 0 of 3 in the lane there. And, you know, for the season, he was 60 of 100 at the rim, which is 60%. That's a little bit below the team mark. I think that as a team, Arkansas was like 64% at the rim this year. But he, you know, he was out of control a few times. And, you know, somebody brought up this point on our message board, the degree of difficulty on some of his shots, being that he is kind of a smaller player, the degree of difficulty on some of his shots around the rim and in the paint, you know, increase over what, you know, maybe a Mason Jones or an Isaiah Joe would have put up. But I think that was kind of the number one thing for me, because on attempts in the lane that were not at the rim, he was 6 of 22, which that's not a real good mark. That's pushing, you know, 30%. And then another thing that I pointed out was, you know, he was kind of shaky at the free throw line. He was 65%. As a guard, you've got to hit more than 65% of your free throws. Like, that's just kind of how it is.
You got to, as a guard, you need to be like around 70. You need to hit 7 out of 10
at the least. Yeah, for sure.
And I didn't even realize that until I read your article that he was shooting 64% from the free throw line. I don't know. I guess he just kind of faded that stat, that whatever, just kind of faded into the subconscious, and I didn't even think about it. But, yeah, that's not great.
No, for sure. And one other thing that I noted in here was that, you know, he was a kind of a streaky player. And I think during the SEC tournament when Arkansas was playing Vanderbilt, he hit like his first five threes. And after his fifth three, I think it was Tom Hart that was like, Desi Sills is the definition of streaky. And I'm like, you're absolutely right, because throughout his entire career, he's either been red hot or ice cold, and there hasn't been much middle ground.
Right.
You know, if he can become, I wrote that he's got a chance to be a really, really special player if he can become, you know, a consistent perimeter threat.
We talked about his toughness earlier, and before we move on to Isaiah Joe, Ben Howland of Mississippi State, he talked about Sills' toughness as well. So let's see.
He shot 46% last year from three. So I don't think his numbers this year are indicative of what a great shooter he is. And the thing I told Reggie, because, you know, he knows these kids well, and I said, was he ever a football player? Because he just has that toughness, that mentality. Like, you know, he probably played football in high school too. I mean, he's a tough character and a tough kid and a great competitor.
And the answer to that question is yes, I think he did play football.
Okay.
So it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. He is a tough guy, and he's hard to, I almost said hard to bring down in the lane. He's hard to contain in the lane. And like you said, the potential for Sills is there for him to be a really good player and a really key player in next year's team.
Definitely. And one other thing that I think I stuck it at the toward the bottom. I think it was the last bullet point in the strengths part of the story. Desi, it was really fun to watch Desi throughout the season, because before this year at Media Day, I talked to him about his motivations kind of entering the year. And I caught him at a pretty opportune time for me, because I sat down next to Nate Allen, who was talking to Desi. And Nate asked Desi if he had gone back to Jonesboro recently or during the summer. And Desi said that he had recently gone back to Jonesboro because one of his best friends in high school passed away following a car accident. And he made it very clear to me that he was dedicating his sophomore season to that friend. And at another point in the year, I think it was when Arkansas played TCU in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. That was the day that Arkansas had its, I think it was the Wear Pink Day. It was the Stand Up to Cancer game. And there was a break, I think it may have been in the second half, when everything just kind of stopped during a timeout and everybody held up their card. They were like, I stand up for fill in the blank. And Desi wrote in one of his best friends' names in that spot. She's a cancer survivor, and I remember being on Instagram and looking at Desi's Instagram story. That meant the world to her, that, you know, he was basically playing for a lot more than himself. And I think I just kind of caught myself at several points in the season just kind of admiring the passion that Desi played with, knowing that he was carrying a lot in his mind and on his shoulders. And just playing with a purpose, I think. And I love that about him.
The Outdoor Adventure Expo will be held Friday, April 3rd and Saturday, April 4th at the Benton County Fairgrounds. Entry to the expo is free with a $10 car/paid parking. Guest speaker is Jace Robertson from A&E's Duck Dynasty, and he will share his personal story with everyone in attendance. The expo will include over 100 of the top outdoor adventure vendors in our area. You can also see Cruisin' to Heaven, the classic car show featuring 100 of the coolest cars and motorcycles around. Plus, there will also be a Battle of the Bucks competition and opportunities to win multiple raffle items, including the NWA FCA custom build motorcycle. There will also be the LJ Jenkins bull riding event that will be Saturday evening. For more information, call 479-225-3928 and make sure to get your family out to this fun event.
All right, let's move on and talk about Isaiah Joe. a guy that was expected to have a really good season, was having a really good season, and then got sidelined with an injury for a while, had to bounce back. The team was completely different when Isaiah Joe was on the floor. The Fort Smith product, Scotty, we'll start with the strengths again. Isaiah Joe, let's start with this. I'm going to ask you this question. From his freshman year to his sophomore year, what did he improve on?
His freshman to his sophomore year, what did he improve on? I think he got a little bit stronger. I think you could see that he was a little bit more defined up top, like his upper body strength was better and more noticeable than his freshman year. I think if you look at the Arkansas's roster his freshman year, he was like 160. He was like 160 something or 170. And then this year, I think he was up around 180 or 185. And so he added a little bit of weight, which was obviously necessary. Another area that I thought he improved with, or not even improved, it was just I thought he shot a solid percentage from three, considering the volume of attempts. Like, think about this. This is a little bit of a taste of the story, just to give you an idea of the rate at which Isaiah let threes fly in his first season under Eric Musselman. He attempted two more threes as a sophomore than he did as a freshman, and he missed six games.
Plus the end of the season.
Yeah, and he didn't get to play the rest of the season, and he also only played 21 minutes in one game because that's when his knee was starting to really act up. Think about that.
Dang.
I mean, there was a stretch from November 25th to January 4th, a stretch of eight consecutive games, he shot at least 10 threes. At Indiana, I think he shot 17, and I think there was another game in there where he shot, at a certain point in the season, he shot 15. And so he got those threes up, and I thought he shot a pretty good percentage considering the number of threes that he took. Some people will say that he had a little bit of a down year shooting the three, but he still made 94, which is good for sixth most in a single season in program history.
And he missed six games, plus at least one more game in the SEC tournament and one more game in a postseason. At least. That's eight games that he at least missed.
So you're thinking he's 19. So he hit 94 threes. He set a record with 113 in his freshman year. And so he only needed 19 threes in eight games to break his own record from the year before.
Yeah, he would have done it.
He would have definitely done it.
And the sheer volume of threes that he's shooting totally makes me think of back to the beginning of the year. And really when we were trying to figure out who Eric Musselman was, and through preseason practices, through media days, through all this kind of stuff. And he's basically telling us that, hey, we're going to play percentages, and we'd rather have Isaiah Joe shoot the three ball than, maybe somebody else shoot a mid-range. And so I think that they played to those percentages of Isaiah Joe can shoot the three. We're going to let him shoot. And if he misses, he misses, because he's going to make 34% of the
time. It's a hit. A three from a tired Isaiah Joe is a better shot than, maybe a rested insert other player here. Like,
I was wondering who you're going to throw under the bus there.
I'm not going to do that today. But that's just a fact. Like, Eric Musselman said that. Like, he would rather have a tired Isaiah Joe shoot than most other players. And I remember during the preseason, it may have been after Arkansas played Arkansas Little Rock in the exhibition game, that Eric said that the night before the game, he was at dinner with an NBA mind, a former NBA mind, and he said, it might benefit you if Isaiah attempts, 12 to 15 threes a game. And we're like, that would be insane if he did that. And then he went out and freaking did it. I mean, he didn't average 15, but he averaged 10 for the year.
Yeah. And as I said,
almost 11.
He wasn't feeling right in one of those games that he played, only playing 20 something minutes. And I don't know. And also, his ability this year, as we move on to something else that he did well in, Scotty, with the ball, I thought he became, especially after, I don't know why, but after his post-surgery on his knee, he seemed to be quicker with the ball. off the dribble and being able to create his own shot. Is there any facts to back me up there, or any? Or do you think the same thing?
Yeah, the second bullet point, his strengths actually for me was he didn't miss a beat after he came back from injury. In the six games that he played after he came back, he averaged 20 points, and he shot the three, I think, at a 35% clip, which is pretty good. He was 5 of 9 from the top of the key, and he was 9 of 23 on the right wing. And the amazing thing to me, and remember, I've covered this kid since he was a sophomore in high school at Northside. I've seen him do some pretty insane things as far as shooting the ball. He comes back. His first game is against Missouri on February 22nd, and he goes 5 of 10 from 3 and scores 24 points. All 5 of his makes were on the right wing. So he comes back, his first game back, he sets a season high for threes made on the right wing with 5 on 6 attempts. It's unbelievable. And I remember there was one point he got matched up with a kid named Mitchell Smith, who plays for Missouri. Mitchell Smith is a Van Buren kid. Fort Smith, Northside, and Van Buren are not exactly strangers to playing in postseason tournaments. And I remember Isaiah got ISO'd on the right wing with Mitchell Smith, and he dribbled right, and he snapped that crossover back to his left hand and just splashed a three right on Mitchell Smith. And it was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that moment sticks out in my mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly, like that was a moment I was like, oh my God, like Isaiah's back. He's back. And it's pretty fun to see. And you know, he scored he scored 20 plus points 4 times, then he had 18 in the last game of the season. And so he was in double figures every game after he came back. And he just, like you said, he just kind of looked fresh. And we wondered, you know, how he would kind of rebound from the operation. But it was almost like that downtime from staying off his feet was like really beneficial to him, because he had logged so many minutes in games, you know, leading up to that point. And he came back and just did all the little things, like he was boxing out, tallying deflections. And, you know, I think Eric Musselman pointed this out at a certain point in the season, because Arkansas wasn't obviously a great rebounding team, but they were pretty good at, like, if you could get your hand on a ball and tip it to a teammate to secure a rebound, Arkansas did that a lot. And Isaiah was one of the best on the team at that. I think it was him and Mason Jones were among the best on the team at doing that. And, you know, he even had 5 steals in his first 3 games back. So he was an immediate defensive impact too.
Yeah, any conversation about Isaiah Joe and his strengths would be remiss if we didn't mention his ability to play defense. For sure, 100%. He was a game changer on the defensive end for Arkansas.
For sure. He finished the season. I'm not exactly sure what the exact number is, but he was somewhere around 20 charges taken. Again, missing 6 games. I think that's leading the team there. And according to Hooplins, which is the lineup combination subscription that I've got, Arkansas allowed 0.90 points per possession with Isaiah on the floor this season over almost 1,700 possessions, defensive possessions, and they allowed 1.01 when he sat in just a little bit over 400 possessions. So, you can see the defensive impact just in that number.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, in basketball, a bucket one time down the court is worth 2 or 3 points. When Isaiah Joe was on the court, teams were averaging less than 1 every time they touched
the ball. Yeah, well under 1.
That's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we really keyed on when Isaiah was gone for those 6 games, and by we, I mean the media, just people watching the team, we keyed on what they were missing from the offensive side, because Mason Jones looked like he was carrying the team, and a lot of times he was. But Musselman was quick to point out during that entire stretch that Isaiah is one of the best defenders they have, and so when you take him away, that opens up scoring for other teams. And it was a big, big key to them during that 6-game stretch.
And another point that Eric Musselman made when Isaiah was out, that Isaiah was – I think he was the team's – like, he had the lowest fouls committed per 40 minutes figure on the entire team. So without him, you're having to substitute a guy in who is maybe a lot more prone to fouling, or like a Jalen Harris.
Yeah.
Like Jalen kind of prone to making some silly fouls on the defensive end. Isaiah only averaged 2 fouls committed per 40 minutes this year, according to KenPom. And, you know, that's largely due to his length. Like, he's got crazy long arms for a guy that's 6'5". And he's one of the guys that Arkansas missed in terms of, like, lateral foot speed. Like, he didn't have to play with his hands defensively a whole lot. And so he wasn't whistled for fouls because he's got such quick feet and he's got long arms.
Stat of the year has got to be Ethan Henderson before he started getting more minutes, right? It's got to be when he was averaging over 10 fouls per 40 minutes.
Yeah, it was outrageous.
Stat of the year, by far.
He finished the season, let's see, he committed 7 fouls per 40 minutes.
Hey, he dropped that. It was in double digits. I remember we were talking, what was the game that he fouled out in? Was it Florida that he fouled out in like 10 minutes?
Yep, played? 5 fouls in 10 minutes.
And we were sitting here during this podcast, and I remember saying, that dude is just not going to play very often because he just keeps fouling. But he brought that down.
And in SEC play, he averaged 7.5.
Jeez.
And he only played 18.2% of available minutes, according to KenPom. So pretty remarkable.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Before we end this sucker here, Scotty, what does Isaiah Joe need to work on? What were his weaknesses over this 2019-2020 campaign?
Yeah, so I've got, like I mentioned, upper body strength earlier. I think he's got to just continue to improve there, because there were definitely points, and I think you'll agree with this, that he put the ball on the floor and tried to get to the hole, but defenders kind of threw him off his track and kind of knocked him off balance because, I mean, the upper body strength just isn't quite where it needs to be yet. I don't have any doubt that he'll continue to work there, so I'm not going to worry about that too much. I think the big thing for me, and it was so weird, was, you know, I do these shot charts, and I do a monthly shot chart month by month. And after the first month of the season, I was like, Isaiah's really struggling shooting the corner three.
Yeah.
And after the first, he was 2 of 7 in November on left corner threes. And in the right corner, he was 0 of 12. And so I think he missed his first 14 or 15 right corner threes this season. He finally made one. I think it was like may have been the first or second game into December. But he really struggled from three in both corners, really. I think he made 17 corner threes this season, which tied for the team lead with Desi Sills. But Desi needed 30 fewer attempts to get there. Isaiah was 17 of 73 in the corners. And jeez. I brought it up at one point, I think it was after Isaiah made 4 corner threes at Ole Miss. I was like, is it just kind of like a matter of time before these corner threes start falling? And, you know, because in the NBA, the corner three is like, dude, if you don't shoot it like 50% from there, it's like something's going on.
Yeah, it's the shortest shot.
Yeah. But Arkansas is like almost the exact opposite of like NBA teams. Like, they struggle mightily in the corner. I think they were on corner threes this season. Arkansas, in the right corner, as a team, Arkansas was 13 of 70, which is under 19%. But once you start moving up the floor, like you get to the wings and the top of the floor, Arkansas was pretty good.
Huh.
But those corner threes was just like, that was kind of a stunning note that just kind of emerged throughout the season. And Isaiah definitely had his struggles there, but he was pretty sharp from the wings, which he's been that way since he got here.
Very good. Again, I'd be remiss, I've said this before, but in a conversation about Isaiah Joe, I have to ask you, Scotty, I'm not going to ask you whether he'll stay or whether he'll go, because we don't necessarily really know. I want to ask you, what do his pro prospects look like?
There's going to be a team that snatches him up in a heartbeat. Absolutely. Like Eric Musselman said it at several different points throughout the season, a lot of getting into the NBA is a certain player specializing in one thing and then kind of working on the other elements of your game. And Isaiah's actually got two things that he's pretty good at. You know, he's not a bad three-point shooter.
No.
I think he's 37 or 38% from three in his Arkansas career on 500 plus attempts, I Jeez. Think. I might have to go back and double-check this. Hold on just one second. I'll look. Yeah, so he's he's shooting 37.8% on 548 three-point attempts, which is pretty good mark. So NBA teams are obviously going to love his ability to shoot the three, and he's got stupid range. Like, it's just unbelievable range. Like, you saw it sometimes in games, like Indiana, for example.
The Indiana game stood out to
me. Indiana game. Like, I come back from vacation, and the first thing I write about is Isaiah's range. And I ask Buzz Williams about it, and he's like, yeah, Isaiah's shooting, like, close to 40% on shots 25-plus feet away from the rim. That's going to translate to the NBA a little bit. And he's, and on another note, like, he's pretty good defender. Mm-hmm. And so the NBA, the way that they're playing now, they're obviously looking for 3-and-D guys. So he's gonna have a role somewhere. I can't wait to see it.
Very good. All right, Scotty, anything else? Did we forget anything before we move on?
No, I think one of the last bullet points that I had in the weaknesses part of Isaiah's breakdown is, you know, he had a few scoreless stretches, which were a little bit concerning. And I wrote about him a couple of times. And he had three games where he had some pretty lengthy scoreless stretches. 31 minutes, 21 seconds against Kentucky in a pretty big game. You know, he came out and he hit a couple of really early threes and then disappeared until the final minutes once the game was kind of decided. He went 25 minutes, 15 seconds at Mississippi State without a bucket. And then against South Carolina, he went almost 18 minutes without a score. All three of those were losses. And so, not to like labor on that point, but he could kind of disappear for stretches of games when Arkansas kind of needed his offense the most. So other than that, you know, I think he kind of ending this on a sour note, and I don't really mean to, but like he kind of uncharacteristically missed some good open looks and some momentum shots. And I think you might agree with that.
Yes.
You know, he just didn't make a number of shots that we saw him hit the year before, and why, I'm not real sure. But some of those misses kind of stuck out to me, and maybe some of you guys too, but still, I mean, rarely can we say this about a guy that made 90 plus threes in a season. So
yeah, exactly. Well, the good thing for you and fan and avid listener of the basketball podcast of Mid-America is we will not disappear on you. Even though the coronavirus is going on, even though you're in quarantine right now, or maybe not, who knows, we will not disappear on you. Scotty and I made sure to wash our hands before we came in here. You did, right, Scotty?
Always.
And we'll be here breaking down the rest of the basketball team and I guess try and give you some closures. We try and find some closure as well in a very topsy-turvy and, I mean, there's no other word to describe it but weird.
Man, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, yeah. When Selection Sunday happened last Sunday and there wasn't...
And it didn't happen.
And I was kind of like, what do I do with my hands?
I'm kind of
sad. It was not a fun time.
Just kind of a scheduling note. I'm going to be putting out these season reviews, I think, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Okay.
So be on the lookout for those because we've got to kind of stretch this out because, as you guys know, like there's no live events to cover. So we're going to kind of stretch these out. And then me and Seth are going to have some fun features coming. I've got one on Adrio Bailey. I've talked to his high school counselor. I've talked to Matt Zimmerman. I talked to Adrio. I think it was the Monday before Arkansas went to the SEC tournament, and hands down, it was the best interview I've ever done. Adrio was so into it and kind of touched on a lot of stuff that was kind of close to his heart and talked about just the wild journey that he's been on, some of the crazy things that he had to do just to, you know, just to see his family his first couple of years in college. You know, Mike Anderson had a rule Adrio's freshman year that freshman players couldn't have a car on campus. So Adrio didn't have a car, and he didn't have a car his sophomore year either. So, you know, just I asked him, how did you get home those first couple of years? And I'm excited to tell that story. And Adrio is such a fun loving, just an entertaining, interesting personality. And I've wanted to tell his story for over a year. Like I literally had in January of 2019, I had an email drafted to send to Mike Kaywood, Arkansas's basketball SID, and I held on to it until about 2 weeks ago.
Jeez.
And I really want to tell this story now, and I think it's, I guess it's as good a time as any.
For sure. So a funny story here to end our talk and not talk about Isaiah Joe and everything that, you know, was disappointing about him and end on a sour note. I have a funny story about Adrio Bailey. My wife knows Adrio Bailey, and so they see each other on campus and they're going by each other, and they developed a relationship all through over the summer. And this was probably right during the middle of Adrio Bailey when he was starting to hit those 3-point shots. And they pass each other and she goes, "Adrio!" And they give each other a hug or something. He's like, "Man, how are you doing? I haven't seen you in so long." She's like, "Oh, I'm good." And she goes, "Man, things have changed since I saw you last summer," because they were hanging out mostly over the summer. And he said, "Yeah, they have." She said, "You can shoot threes now." And he looked her straight in the eyes and said, "And you wear makeup now."
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Megan was like, "You know what? I couldn't even be mad, because most of the time when I'd see him, I didn't have makeup on." And right. She's like, "So, I mean, he was telling the truth."
That's incredible.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. It was hilarious. But that's a funny Adrio Bailey
story. I'm sure lots of people have, you know, little interactions, little notes like that.
He's a character.
Adrio. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a fantastic guy. And, man, I just hate it for him and all the rest of the seniors that this season ended like this.
I know it. And after, you know, I'm working on that feature on Adrio. After that comes out, we're going to, obviously, what I'm planning on doing is I'm probably going to, on Friday, post the season review on Adrio. And then the following Monday, when I'm, you know, when I've scheduled to have, you know, another season review on Monday, I might post, the feature on Adrio at that point, and then might do another podcast, and I'll post we'll include the audio for my interview with Adrio.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, he was incredible. He was drawing attention in the practice gym because he was laughing so hard at some of the things he was talking about. So it was awesome.
Fantastic. All right. As we said, that's Scotty Borderline. His stories that he is talking about will be in the description. So if you want to check out those stories, click in the description and they will take you right to Whole Hog Sports, and they will take you right to Scotty's stories. And you may be thinking that during this downtime that there's not a whole lot of reason to have a subscription to Whole Hog Sports. But if you don't have one, I greatly encourage you to
get one. Now is the time to get one.
Because we will entertain you with sports, even when there is no sports, because that's our job. And we'll be there for you every step of the way. So make sure, you know, it is Scotty's job. It's Matt's job. It's Dudley's job. It's Clay's job. And I'm going to keep going on and on, and because
it's your job too. You're in this.
My job. It's everybody's job to keep everybody entertained, because that's how many people we have writing for us. That's how many people give you information, and you will get all that great information on wholehogsports.com.
I've got this season review series going. There's 9 parts, and Seth has the Alexis Tolfrey feature coming.
And we got something in the works on the video side as well.
Awesome.
I can tease it a little bit. We're getting it started, but to, I don't know, get you out of a funk of not getting any games. What can you do when there are no new games? Well, you can go back and look at some of the older ones. So that's all I'll give you right now, but we got something in the works going for that.
For sure. And then right now, Clay Henry has on the website right now, he talked to Nolan Richardson. He called him up. They had an hour-long conversation on the phone, and Clay wrote a really good column from that. And I learned some things about Nolan Richardson, particularly after Arkansas lost the national championship game in 1995. Nolan talked about that, about how he just didn't have like the fire in him for that game. And Clay kind of dives into the reason why that is. And he just kind of catches up with Nolan and reminisces about the glory days of Arkansas basketball. And then Bob Holt is coming out with a story on John George, who is the voice of he's the PA voice in Bud Walton Arena for Arkansas's men's basketball games. And he's also the PA guy at the SEC tournament. And so he was in the middle of all of the hysteria going on in Nashville during the SEC tournament. And yeah, that's another terrific story. So now's the time to hop on board with Whole Hog and Hogs Illustrated.
For sure. All right.
It's the mag and the website don't stop.
The mag and the website don't stop. Deadlines don't stop. You got to go. You're in the news business. It's unforgiving. All right. For Scotty Bordelon, the prophet, who said that the biggest story of the SEC tournament would be the coronavirus, and oh boy, was he right. I'm Seth Campbell saying so long. We'll see you back here next week.
Hey guys, one more time, I just wanted to remind you about the Outdoor Adventure Expo that will be held Friday, April 3rd and Saturday, April 4th at the Benton County Fairgrounds. It'll be great family fun, so make sure to call 479-225-3928 for more information.